Welcome to Work Ninjas, where we explore our relationship with work and the invisible forces that influence our professional lives. Join us as we share a great podcast and discuss how the concepts and lessons apply to our work and daily practices. I'm your host, Kelly Mitten, but it wouldn't be complete without my fellow ninjas, Wayne Kelly and Erica Brown. We'll learn practical techniques to navigate the proverbial china shop with agility, grace, and precision. Welcome, ninjas. Your training begins now. Today, we're discussing episode 31 of the Other F Word podcast. John Brinkus, a producer and host of Sports Science, explains how he learned to embrace failure after realizing that crossing the proverbial finish line isn't necessarily the measure of success. This episode is a favorite of mine, not only because he has some great insights and strategies, but because he also shows us that our definitions of failure and success are not static, that they can and perhaps even should change over time. We get into egos, humility, as well as the power of learning and growth mindsets. This is a good one. We'd love for you to follow along, so if you haven't listened to this podcast, hit pause and click the link in the description below. We'll be here when you get back. Let's get to the conversation.
Welcome to Work Ninjas, everyone. Erica Brown,
Kelly Mitten,
and Wayne Kelly. Okay, so this podcast is about how John Brinkus reframed failure for himself and how the definition of failure has evolved for him throughout the course of his life and throughout the course of his work and professional successes and failures. Can one of you describe how John's definition of failure changed and why that was?
I think with John, when you look at all the stories that he shares, including the triathlon, for him, success was always crossing that finish line. And I think as he got older and had different experiences, he realized that crossing that finish line wasn't necessarily success. And also, at some point, determining that it really was time that he stepped away from something, that wasn't failure. And so I think for him, he started to shift his view of success and failure, no longer necessarily measuring it around that finish line.
It's arbitrary sometimes how we define failure and how we define success. And when you finally figure out that there's a failure or finish line, why is the finish line the win? Out of all the things in his life, why was that the win? And I think you said it because of the tunnel vision.
Yeah.
When you think back to the scarcity podcast and tunnel vision, for him, that finish line was the goal. And he didn't necessarily see everything that was perhaps being impacted on his way to that finish line. So for me, it was when he was talking about the triathlon and when he actually started to talk about the fact that he had two young kids at the age of 27 and he, you know, was hypothermic and his suit was cutting into him. That's all he could focus on. What are you risking as you're plowing through to that finish line?
And I see this directly translating to work, because how many of us work from home and give our kids that finger of one more minute, or you're on a client phone call and you're telling them to shush. You know, those are the things that they remember.
And so what was his new motto after this realization that the definition of failure has changed? He came up with a new phrase.
Don't quit unless you should.
Because everything has a cost.
The one thing I would love to have heard in this podcast actually was a follow-up question on that. If there was an example where he actually did quit because he should, and consider that actually a success rather than a failure. Now, this was a really interesting podcast. And so this new motto came out towards the end and they'd gone through a bunch of different really good examples of how he had built potential failure into success. So I think there's a lot of value there. And I know when we've been sitting around talking about this, getting ready for today's podcast, some of those lessons are also really key and important that we want to bring up and share with everybody, such as...
Do you know what I noticed too? I mean, so when he was going to the University of Virginia, he wasn't finding the program that fit what he was looking to do. So one of his profs encouraged him to go out and create your own degree. And I just noticed he didn't necessarily live in a box. He created those rules for himself.
He allowed himself to be a beginner.
Right. And he created his own box, essentially, right? You know, when there wasn't something that fit what he needed, he was creative and he was innovative in the way he approached it and felt like, I don't need to necessarily fit myself into this. Let's create something that will work. And I know something I've learned from Kelly is to ask the question, right? Because you don't know what possibilities lie ahead of you if you don't ask the question. And so, you know, if something is not working for you, just put it out there because you never know what could be.
So we actually had a whole episode on being a better you with Jia Jiang, talking about not being scared to put yourself out and actually ask those questions, because not only might you be surprised with the responses, but it opens up a whole bunch of unexpected opportunities as well.
And that's something that John had no problem with. You know, he talked about when he walked into Tower Records, but he got lessons from this incredible musician. He wanted to learn how to swim. So he sourced out an Olympic swimmer.
Olympic coach, yeah.
Olympic coach.
And even he went back to his old high school coach to learn how to run under a 5-minute mile.
Right. So being willing to ask the question, and in all of these scenarios, he wasn't rejected.
He was courageous, because it's not easy to say that you aren't an expert. His ego got him into the mess, and then he had to figure out how to get out of it.
But I thought him as an individual, as a personality, is just really interesting, because his ego would get him into things. But then where most of us have issues with our ego in terms of asking for help, he had no problem saying, okay, how do I do this? I said I'm going to do this. Again, the swimming one was a classic example. He had a friend that did a triathlon. And so John decided to, as guys tend to do, one up him and said, well, I'm going to do an Ironman. And he didn't even really know what an Ironman was at the time. But then he decided to fly off to New Zealand on his own and do an Ironman. And he learned how to swim literally days before the Ironman. And it was by asking for help from an Olympic coach who happened to be teaching a course nearby that he overcame that. It's so different, I think, where many of us find ourselves, we're hesitant to get into something. And then once we do, we don't ask for help. He jumps into things with both feet, and he's not scared to ask for help. And again, when you listen to this podcast, the list of things that he's done and the stories he has, an amazing suite of interesting and impressive things.
His ego gets him into trouble, but then his learner's mind gets him out of trouble.
He describes it. He actually says about seeking out mentors, sometimes he's confident that he knows it, but he wants somebody to help validate. And why not ask an expert in the field to help you validate? It actually cuts the learning time and the process, and he just wants to get right to the chase. And that's how he views help, which is one of those things in this podcast that really turned how I perceive asking for help on its head. That's a lot better perspective than, oh, I can't do it. And there's that shame that comes with it in terms of admitting that you can't do it.
And I think about in a workplace environment, our egos can get us into just some trouble. And we also sometimes feel like we need to defend our views. But what you can actually acknowledge that you may not know everything about everything, and bring in a group of people with different views and experiences to realize that that is actually what elevates your outcomes, because you've brought everyone's expertise to create a solution or an opportunity that moves you forward.
And to be fair, I mean, knowing that you can ask for help or that you have experience finding help to help you through things gives you a confidence in trying something new or unknown. And, you know, again, the whole episode was about fear and failure. That's what often stops many of us from trying something new or from completing something we've undertaken. For John, it's the confidence to know how to move forward, and whether that's often bringing in help from experts. I think that really set him up well for doing a lot of impressive things. And that's some of the lessons that I took out of that was, if you have that confidence that you can assemble a team, you be able to go further, farther, faster, and better. Yeah, things get a lot less scary.
You just touched on something that I really thought was very valuable in this podcast, is the fact that they talked about needing to know how you're wired. Because I think for John, for him, he's such an achiever that he's always moving forward so quickly, and that he has to sometimes pull himself back a little bit. Where at the very end of the podcast, they talked about, what if you're the opposite of that and you almost need a greater push to get to that point where you're willing to try something? And so I think a big piece is taking some time to understand yourself and to understand how you're wired and what you need to get to that balanced place. For some, it might have to be pulling yourself back a little bit. Others, maybe giving you that extra nudge.
So, anyone care to share where you fit on that range of how you're wired?
And I would say for myself, there's certain areas in my life that I'm an overachiever. And there's other areas in my life where I need that nudge, because I need that vote of confidence to say, you can do this, you got this. And once I get into that zone, then I can fly. But sometimes I do need that nudge to get me there first.
In a work context, how does that play out?
Possibly seeking validation that I'm on the right track. I enjoy collaboration a lot, because I think that it helps me to do a bit of a check and balance to see if I'm on the right track or not. And it's that feedback that you get that does give you that bit of validation or that confidence that you're moving in the right direction.
Is that a vote of confidence or recognition of strengths? Because for me, if your boss identifies your strengths instead of always picking out your weaknesses, that is the vote of confidence.
And again, I think we have to, that shows like using the word needy puts a negative connotation on it.
Yeah.
And I agree with Kelly. I mean, that's a very natural requirement for a workplace. And we all do it. Sometimes we recognize those votes or that validation in different ways. And so it might be the ways in which we get validation. But absolutely, I'm the same way. I need positive affirmation, just like you do, Erica. And I think we all do.
There's nothing wrong with asking for feedback and wanting to be valued. But somehow our workplaces have shamed us. And in fact, if you need encouragement, then you're one of the weak ones.
Yeah, and that would be one of the challenges and cautions that I would give to our listeners as they're listening to other F Word John Branca's podcast is he has had a lot of success in his life and he's done some impressive things. But I think he's very open about the struggles that, you know, some of those things led to and how hard it was for him to do some of those things. So I think it's important to take away some of the lessons from the podcast and not get discouraged by how successful this guy is. And it's fun because the hosts actually have the same reaction, you know, throughout the podcast, joking around with them that, you know, I liked you when you walk in, but now we can't be friends anymore. But no, I think it's, you know, we've talked about it a bit. He's got some really important things about asking for help. Another one is redefining failure. You know, that's really key. And that sort of builds on, we're talking about how you're wired. Maybe for some of us, the failure is about not asking for help. That's how we should be defining failure. If we have this challenge, this opportunity, this situation in front of us, and we are hesitant to start it because we won't ask for help, then that is actually maybe where our failure might be.
I thought this podcast was interesting because he took you through the whole scenario and all the decision-making points, and I could almost pick which outs I would take. Because in order to get to a point where you're filming, there is going to be loads of little miniature failures all along the way. And he talked about that. It's the whole idea of how are we framing failure for ourselves and for our colleagues. Like, we talk about if you're so focused on the failure with tunnel vision, it makes it all consuming, and it's inability to see the successes along with it. And so if we can redefine failure as maybe one point and by that point redefine success as everything else other than, you know, everything going downhill with the kitchen sink, then we have more wins.
And I think it's also appreciating that success does look differently for everyone, because for some people it may be those small wins. For others, it might be all or nothing. And as people, again, start to understand how they're wired. And if we also start to understand not only how we are wired, but how others are wired, we can do a better job of supporting each other, I think, in being successful.
And redefining situations, because there are many truths within a situation. And we pull out the ones that are familiar. They're not the best truths that we pull out of a situation. And that's habitual. It's like knowing which tools we need to pull out of our toolbox when something happens.
And again, as our society changes and we become more creative, knowledge-focused, innovative, entrepreneurial, failure is going to have to be more and more part of our lives. So talking about failure, I was at a conference last month and this exact issue came up. And policymakers, researchers, and practitioners from around the world talked about how communities, people, businesses need to be more innovative and creative, and they need policy to help them support that. So everybody was talking the talk. And they said where the challenge is getting policymakers and people in charge and people with skin in the game to actually walk the talk. And failure and the fear of failure is one of those biggest barriers. It's all good to say we need to be more innovative. We need our rural businesses, our rural municipalities to try these new things. But when it comes actually time for them to approve projects or put forward policies, they still hedge their bets and still go with the safe approach or the one that's most guaranteed in terms of success, as in it will work as expected, rather than trying something that could have much greater outcomes, but knowing that there's a higher chance of failing. We actually need to embrace this failure, and it's redefining it. It's not crossing the finish line. It's did we do our best and what did we learn from it as we did it?
It has to be, because it's something that's a work in progress. Policies are never right the first time. It's an iterative process, but we like to think of it as one and done. And nothing in this world is one and done anymore.
Well, and that's the challenge, right? Policymakers, decision makers, we can talk about that on one hand, but comes time to actually make decisions. We always hedge on needs to be successful the first time and that the risk of failure is overwhelming.
Like businesses saying they support healthy workplaces, but give all financial motivation comes from sales.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you would put yourself and your own health at risk in order to make a sale, and then the company will reward you for that.
I think sometimes it's like we all buy in to what we need to do to move forward, to be innovative, to take those risks. But I think when it comes down to it, sometimes it's that fear that stops us from actually taking that leap. And then so to what you said there, Wayne, it's sometimes easier or it feels more comfortable to take the safe route, but to know and almost expect that there are going to, in fact, be failures. And I think that's what we've talked about. If there aren't failures, are we truly moving forward?
We get so attached to the outcome that we can't actually research or investigate because we're so attached to having a specific outcome instead of actually running an experiment and seeing what the outcomes are.
That was actually one of the other things that John talked about that I think didn't get enough emphasis maybe in the podcast, but was really important. He was comfortable with failure. He just had the mindset that he was not going to make that same mistake twice. And he did describe a really good situation when he was in high school English class and they were supposed to read Beowulf. He had gone out and read the Cliff's Notes versions and he'd done a really good job. He aced the test. He knew everything that was on it and he got his mark back and it was big fat F. Mm-hmm. And he was shocked and he went and talked to his teacher and the teacher said, yeah, you knew everything that was on it, but you
cut corners.
And she said, it was obvious it was from the Cliff Notes. And so you cut corners. And his statement there was, you know, wow. So cutting corners has a consequence. And he said after that, yeah, I make mistakes all the time, but my attitude is that I'm not going to hit that same wall twice. I might hit another wall, right? And it's that confidence, you know, I can see now as we've been talking about that, it's that confidence along with that comfort level of asking for help, that opens up so many doors.
Because you edit the process, see the results. From your results, you edit the process instead of fearing the results and not starting the process.
So say a bit more about that, editing the process.
Because every time you try something, you will get outcomes. They may not be the outcomes that you were intending, but there is always an outcome. And if you examine it, you can edit your process. You can edit your behavior to try different outcomes. But if you're so afraid of a negative outcome that you actually never try to create a process, you'll never go anywhere and you'll never create anything.
And it's those failures that we are learning the most from. Probably not those times that we hit the nail on the head the first time, right? So it is in fact those failures that you should be embracing because that's what's going to continue to be even more successful because of what you've learned from those failures.
So embracing failures, asking for help. What other key messages or takeaways did we hear in this podcast? I think maybe the other third element, if you want to talk a bit more about it, is that fear of failure.
I love their concept of don't experience Armageddon until it happens.
And he said they very deliberately use the word Armageddon because when we're talking about our fear of failure or of taking that risk, we always imagine the absolute worst case scenario or, you know, our very own personal Armageddon. And his point was Armageddon so rarely happens. It is never going to be as bad as you fear. And again, you can't worry about it until it's actually happened.
I was going to say too, one other takeaway for me is I like the idea of seeking out mentors and not being afraid to perhaps approach people because I'm only one person with a fairly, you know, narrow scope because of what I have experienced. And knowing that what others are able to offer can only enhance that knowledge and that ability in myself.
So what are you going to try this week?
I think for me, the biggest takeaway would be to start expecting failure, make it part of the normal process. Part of the learning process. Don't expect to hit the nail on the head the first time and to actually build that into what your success is about. So the next time I do something and it doesn't go exactly how I want it the first time, don't look at it as a negative. Look at it as something that I can learn from. And moving forward, I'm going to be that much better because I experienced that and I can learn from it.
For me, the biggest takeaway was that failure isn't a static state and it's something that can be redefined as you go forward. The proverbial goalposts are sometimes set arbitrarily. And when we start re-examining our goalposts and what we're striving towards, we can become more mindful. So for me this week, it will be re-examining my endpoint, because there's no such thing as an endpoint. It's just iterations and iterations. Even if we wish it was an endpoint, there is always going to be change.
That's really good. And I'd actually even like to challenge us to stop calling them failures. Is it really a failure, or is it just an experience that we're learning from?
And it's a snapshot in time, because we don't see some of the lessons that we will learn until after the fact.
Again, I think it's all about changing this culture, and changing the terminology might work, but just accepting that you're better off trying things and learning than not trying at all. The key takeaway sort of builds on that, and it's about asking for help, that there shouldn't be shame in asking for help. And actually, it's part of our responsibility to ask for help. If asking for help can make things go further, farther, faster, and do a better job, I think figuring out how to do that and how to make it okay to ask each other for help is going to be an important thing that I start looking at within my work.
All right, so that's it for this week.
Thank you so much for listening to us. This
next week, we'll be talking about how to fix iPhones.
Thank God for iPhones.
Thank you so much for listening. Like us and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, everyone.
Ninjas on.